Well, good evening. We've come to number 9, I do believe. So this is the chapter about how practicers were identified in the olden days, you could say. They were divided into 4 different classes, just as there were classes in India of people that, into which you are born. And which you can't escape ever. So if you're born into a Dalit class, then you're cleaning the toilets for generations and generations. If you're a Brahmin, then you're a great scholar, and your children will become Brahmins and great scholars also. So this is a little different from that, but it's the same kind of dividing things up and identify means to point. The dent is the word for finger. So identify means you can point to somebody and say, that's an arhat. Because of this, this, and this, because it fits the criteria. Or that's, what does he call it? A river finder. If somebody finds the river, that's the first step. A river finder. And a once returner. And what do they call the third one? Non-returner. But a non-returner is still hasn't got there yet. Only arhats get there. So this chapter is about that. Chao Ming called this chapter One Form, No Form. It's about the attainments of the attainments of practicers, shravakas, arhats. And the whole idea was to attain. Even though we just chanted with nothing to attain, the bodhisattva depends on prajna, that came later. And of course, these divisions still exist in the Theravadin tradition that goes on today, including the fact that lay people cannot be arhats. Lay people can go through the first 3, but they can't escape from rebirth, escape from this mortal coil, you could say. So this is Subhuti's experience. He's been passing through these different stages. He has found the river. And he's been speaking from his own experience of emptiness, in which emptiness is what he thinks of as the true reality. Shravaka means one who hears from a distance. So it's with some perspective, but a loss of detail. So he's free of attachment to a self, a body, a soul. But he's still he's still stuck with himself and isn't aware of others or the reason for himself. Since the infinite body of merit comes only from liberating others, the Shravaka's detachment, though leading to nirvana, is not based on compassion. So their practice does not lead to Buddhahood. It always seems to come back to compassion. Over and over. So their suffering stops, because they're not coming back to further rebirths. But arhats are unable to aspire to full enlightenment. This is so different from what we grow up with, that it seems curious. It's always seemed curious to me to describe practice in this way. And I don't know how many of us experience practice in this way. These four stages also are accompanied by the bhumis, of which I think there are 12, which are stages of meditation, starting with the ordinary mind, the everyday mind, and then the mind of peace and quiet, tranquility, and then joy, and then a kind of bump into an undescribable state, and then from there it goes to more and more undescribable states until it reaches the top where it can't be said. Can't be spoken. It's too vast. When Buddha died, he was said to have gone through the bhumis. They could tell what stage he was in, all the way up to the top, to the most open and wide. But in order to die, he came all the way back to the joyous one, to the one down at the almost the everyday level. So the river finders, sorry about my voice. It's been fine all day. They discover the river of impermanence. They see that things as they are no things. They're free from belief in an individual self or soul. And in the extremes of idealism and nihilism, they believe in no morality, that one's belief is right even when contradicted in ascetic practices. Letting go of self, they find the river. So that's the crucial element. Letting go of self, the river is discovered. The river of impermanence. Then the second level is once returners. who cut off their views but not their thoughts. The ideas are gone, but the thinking still goes on. So they return for one more birth. They have to come back. In our Mahayana practice, we say of bodhisattvas that they vow to always come back, birth after birth, for the sake of beings. So it is a direct addressing of this situation here, where the desire of practice is to go out of here and never come back, and just get it yourself, and then be free. Then the third one is non-returners. So they made it, and lay people even can get to be a non-returner. who cut off deluded thoughts in the realm of desire and are reborn in the four heavens of the realm of form. They cut off egotism, wrong practice, doubt. Letting go of life, they return no more. When we see the great wheel of time, the course of human life, it has heaven on it, as well as hell and birth and old age and all the things that go into human life in the jaws of time. With Buddha up here and greed, anger, and ignorance right in the middle as the what holds the wheel and turns it. So even in the third stage, getting to heaven doesn't mean you're really done, because in terms of Buddha's teaching, you keep coming back. The only way you can avoid coming back really is to step off that wheel. And that's the fourth stage. That's the arhat stage. Arhat cuts off 72 deluded thoughts in realms of form and formlessness. I would think there'd be a lot more than 72, but that's what it says. Has no further existence. Even dharmas aren't present. Birth and death mind is at rest. It's the stage beyond returning. Letting go of the soul, they free themselves from passions that bind one to birth and death. So this is what Subhuti has learned, and this is what Subhuti is trying to attain. And he's considered to be one of Buddha's very best students, so the Buddha wants to be sure that he can see beyond this. So when he says, "Tell me, Subhuti, do those who find the river think I have attained the goal of finding the river?" He starts right out with attaining the river. And Subhuti says, "No, no, Bhagavan." Let's read it. Somebody want to read it?
I'll read it. Subhuti replied, "No, indeed, Bhagavan. Those who find the river do not think, 'I have attained the goal of finding the river.' And why not? Bhagavan, they do not find any such dharma. Thus are they said to find the river. They do not find a sight, nor do they find a sound, a smell, a taste, a touch, or a dharma. Thus are they said to find the river. Bhagavan, if those who found the river should think, 'I have attained the goal of finding the river,' they would be attached to a self. They would be attached to a being, a life, and a soul." The Buddha said, "Tell me, Subhuti, do those who return once more think, 'I have attained the goal of returning once more?'" Subhuti replied, "No, indeed, Bhagavan. Those who return once more do not think, 'I have attained the goal of returning once more.' And why not? Bhagavan, they do not find any such dharma as returning once more. Thus are they said to return once more." The Buddha said, "Tell me, Subhuti, those who return no more think, 'I have attained the goal of returning no more.'" Subhuti replied, "No, indeed, Bhagavan, those who return no more do not think, 'I have attained the goal of returning no more.' And why not? Bhagavan, they do not find any such dharma as returning no more. Thus are they said to return no more." The Buddha said, "Tell me, Subhuti, do those who are free from rebirth think, 'I have attained freedom from rebirth?'" Subhuti replied, "No, indeed, Bhagavan. Those who are free from rebirth do not think, 'I have attained freedom from rebirth.' And why not? Bhagavan, there is no such dharma as freedom from rebirth. Thus are they said to be free from rebirth. Yet, Bhagavan, those who are free from rebirth can think, 'I have attained freedom from rebirth,' they would be attached to a self. They would be attached to a being, a life, and a soul." "And how so?" Bhagavan, the Tathaka, the Arhat, the fully enlightened one, has declared that I am foremost among those who dwell free of passion. Bhagavan, although I am free from rebirth and without desires, I do not think I am free from rebirth and without desires. Bhagavan, if I thought I have attained freedom from rebirth, the Tathagata would not have singled me out by saying, 'Foremost among those who dwell free of passion is the noble son Subhuti, for he dwells nowhere at all. Thus he is called one who dwells free of passion, who dwells free of passion.'"
Rineng said about dwelling free of passion, "In Chinese, we call this the practice of no contention. No contention means the practice of purity. The practice of purity is intended to rid oneself of the mind that possesses. If the mind that possesses remains, there is attachment. Attachment is not the way of purity. To always possess the mind that possesses nothing is to practice no contention." Thank you. He got a little stroke, Subhuti did, at the end of this, which is nice. Or he stroked himself a bit. And the bottom line of it is being free of contention, being free actually of the sense of self and other. If you have a sense of self, you automatically have a sense of other. Just like if you have a sense of war, you have it automatically defines peace as the absence of war. So one of the tricky ways that our mind works is to posit one thing and automatically, without realizing it, create the other side. And so all of these discussions are going along pointing out that that's what we do, and that if you talk about anything that you and become attached to it, that already you're you've lost the way. Subhuti dwells nowhere. Subhuti dwells nowhere at all. And dwelling nowhere is what is called being free of passion. So he's not thinking of all these different things that he might think about. Oh, I'm a river crosser. I'm a once returner. Once we begin to identify ourselves, then all the others show up and become a contentious situation for us. It's only when we drop the sense of self that others become one with us and we with them. And that's where compassion comes in. Questions? Is it just too confusing? It's how the mind works. And what the mind chooses.
The show.
Well, Buddha said that's one of the questions we don't need to ask, because we're in such a situation that we better take care of ourselves first. And then if there's time left after we're taking care of ourselves and our life and everything, then maybe we can go back and ask questions like that. He said it's like being struck by an arrow, and while you're lying there bleeding, you're asking, what was the wood this arrow was made of? And what was the feather? What bird is that? And all the while, you're succumbing to the poison that's on the tip of the arrow. That's his take on those kinds of ultimate questions. So I think we all have a kind of natural instinct toward source, you could say. And it is talked about a bit in our practice, but not so obviously. In some practices, Buddha becomes the sort of projected ultimate being, or as we said before, the Dharmakaya becomes that. But that all seems limited. So And I think Buddha found it limited, that it immediately turns it into something else. Turns into an it. One more it. That makes sense at all?
I'll keep doing that for a while. That makes sense. The reason I asked that was a good answer is it just seems like sometimes things just happen, you know, out of our control. We'd be doing this and this happens, so we have to pay attention to this because it's more important than this. But I thought that was important, you know.
Yes.
So it's like, who's directing the show? So that's where I came from. But
I see.
But I think the answer applies to that as well.
Well, some people would say karma. Mm. All the causes and conditions that came, it went into making each situation. Every single one is filled with all the things that happened before. So many that we could never identify all of them. And so we call it karma. And in that sense, we can't know what our karma is. In another sense, of course, we do, because we're in the moment. And so we have a choice from this moment on. Mm-hmm. Whatever made this moment isn't so important. What we contribute to the next action is in our hands to do. But it does slip and slide. You never know where it's going. Anything else? Well, it's time to go, actually.